Welcome to a very special Transmissions podcast episode where we do a deep spoiler-filled dive into Transformers War for Cybertron Kingdom. So the show is out. You should be able to check it out on Netflix. And if you haven't watched it yet, go back, go and watch it before you keep listening to this show, because we're going to spoil the heck out of it. So go check out War for Cybertron Kingdom on Netflix, then come back here and listen to us rant and rave about Kingdom and all the Easter eggs, all the nitpicks, everything. That's what this show is going to be about. I'm your host, Charles, a.k.a. Big C. I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team, Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hello.
Our awesome producer and editor, Mike.
You said we're doing a deep dive, but I didn't notice deep dive anywhere on Kingdom.
Womp womp. And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
Hello. Let's talk Transformers.
And we are again joined by our special guest, Ant from TFU.info. Ant, thanks for joining us again.
Happy to be here. Dinobot has spoken. My rigid grill structure.
Oh, that's a deep cut. Deep cut.
I don't get it.
You need to watch more Beast Wars, Daryl. Wouldn't expect anything less from Ant, the proprietor of Transformers University. So, you know, all the in jokes and references are available there on his podcast. So, all right. So we did our spoiler free review. You can check that out on on our previous podcast. It's up on YouTube. It's in our podcast feed. So we gave you all our impressions about the show. So now we can talk all about the stuff that we love, the stuff that irked us. And, you know, let's jump right in. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Since we'll mix up the order a little bit.
Oh, man, this is so exciting. So what should I start with anyway? Should I just kind of go over like the overall kind of stuff just, I got or like.
I think we'll.
Do you want to do episode by episode kind of thing?
No,
we're recording live right now, Mike. So why don't you just go into it?
This is the kind of stuff that we should have planned out before.
I was thinking we wouldn't do a summary or episode by episode. We just jump in and talk about some of the different elements and things we liked and didn't like. So you can go and point by point whatever you want to talk about.
Okay. So I'll start off with probably my biggest criticism on the show, and we'll go down from there. So the biggest issue, and FJ, I know you're listening, so let's get this out of the way right now. Biggest issue, episodes 1 through 5, I thought was a really, really solid integrated story that worked out really, really well. And the ending at episode 5, when they were kind of flying off, like once they had gotten the Allspark. Once they had gotten the Allspark and are flying off into space, that honestly, and I hate to say this, but I wish that was the ending, because I was not the biggest fan of episode 6. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was because there was just a ton of like kind of Deus Ex Machina kind of like elements that really just kind of came in at the end of this that just it hurriedly wrapped up the series. Now, I get it. It's a 6-episode series. So it is limited in what you can do in that amount of time. So it needs to tell a complete story in those 6 episodes. But I don't think a lot of the elements from the episode 6 really added a whole lot to the story. And there was just like a lot of like, there's like a lot of like weird, confusing elements to it too. Like, all right. So when they jumped back through the dead universe, like why, I don't quite get why that happened. Like I thought they had fixed that problem and fixed that issue that kind of brought them through it in the first place, and then all of a sudden they go back into it on the way back to Cybertron. I you know, that's like, I don't know. Like, I don't,
you did have that in one of the episodes. You had the big shot of a space bridge floating above Earth. I always assumed they would just take that, boom, they're back on Cybertron.
Yeah, exactly. The side trip through the dead universe on the earlier episodes, I get it. Like, I forget the exact like story plot element that they had used for it, but it was like Teletran got infected or something with like information from the dead universe, and that's kind of what caused it. But there was a story plot element that caused them to go into the dead universe at that time, and okay, I'm fine with that. I didn't get why it happened again on the way back. Now we did have an interview with FJ DeSanto, and he did talk about like the whole like Nemesis, the Nemesis Prime that came in, and that like honestly that talk alone really did help out with like, okay, why did Nemesis Prime show up? Because I haven't watched Earthrise in, I think, since it came out, and since I didn't remember it, Nemesis just showed up in episode 6, and it's like, well, where the fuck did you come from? Why? Where is this going? So like hearing after you talk about it and kind of understanding, oh, okay, so there were some plot threads that I just forgot from like Earthrise and from previous episodes that, you know, it just, I didn't remember it. There's a comment as to like why did Optimus become Nemesis Prime? And I would have really loved to see that story or see more of that explored. And again, 6 episodes, you know, you don't have a ton of time in order to explore all that, but that's definitely something I would have liked to have seen more of and see like, okay, how did you get from here, from where you are now, from this Optimus to the Nemesis Prime version of Optimus? Mm-hmm. But yeah, in terms of story, episodes 1 through 5, I thought were really, really strong, solid story arc. I absolutely loved the reveal of the arc in episode 5. I was like, oh my God, that's so good. I want the arc now. So yeah, that was really, really great. I'm not going to just like jump into every like story element, because I'm sure like you guys have your own that you want to talk about, but there was like a lot of really, really good, strong story moments that were happening through it. But the favorite part for me was like near the end of episode 5, where the arc transforms and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, we got this big giant bot now. And he freaking punches the Decepticon ship. Just like, boom, take that. That was awesome. I love that. Yeah. So there was a lot of really, really good elements. I just think that the kind of like the cliffhanger and not the cliffhanger, the catharsis, the ending at episode 5, I thought was stronger. A stronger ending point than it was on episode 6. That's the worst of it. All right, FJ, you come at me. We're good.
And that would line up with the ending of Beast Wars the series.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jeremy, let's move on to you. What are some general thoughts you had?
I do agree that, yeah, it does seem... Episode 6 did have a different tone. I guess since Mike mentioned the arc heretofore, we refer that to as Teletran, as I have been like wanting since we first saw the toy, when it responded to the name Teletran, I yelled out. It was so... It's such a redeeming moment for me personally, and I believe FJ put that in for me. He didn't. This was done like a year ago, you know. But I can have my own headcanon. But I appreciate that. I think it's smart that Teletran, the computer, is controlling the bot. It makes sense. So Hasbro, you're dumb for just naming it the art.
Shots fired.
Yeah. Since Mike went into something he hated, I'm going to go into something I love. I thought Dinobot's arc was very strong in here. It it consolidated the entire was Code of Heroes the second season, right?
Code of Heroes. Yep.
Yeah. So it was like what 1.5 seasons worth of Dinobot into essentially what 3 episodes, I think, of the show. He never joins the Maximals, but we see that he is very much his own bot. He has his honor. He joins up with Megatron because he thought that Megatron was honorable. He, you know, it. I think I might also be mixing up some of the comic stuff because so much of the similar things are happening. It's mixing them up in my head. But I think Dinobot, he definitely made the right choices at the end. And I love the like scene at the end with Optimus Primal where he's like, he's dying and he's like, I wanted to defect so many times. Would you have taken me? And Primal's like, of course we would have, but you would have made a horrible Maximal. And I thought that was a good line. I did enjoy the voice acting for Dinobot. It definitely was not Scott McNeil, but I thought it fit the character. It was good.
Reminded me of Worf from Star Trek.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, and Worf has honor. Dinobot has armor or honor.
It's the one celebrity voice in the show.
Oh, that was Michael Dorn?
Was it Michael Dorn?
No. It was rapper Chris Calica.
Okay.
Oh, so I'm over 40. I have no idea who he is.
Well, I thought he did a good job. He voiced Dinobot with honor. So yeah, I thought that was just a really good arc, you know, within the whole confines of the whole show.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ant, we'll go to you. What were your some of your thoughts?
All right, I'll bounce around from positive to negative here since Mike went negative, Jeremy went positive. I'll do a little bit of both.
I offered a compliment too.
Yeah. So I will say that the writing so far in this series is, and I agree with Mike, the first 5 episodes feel like a different show than that 6th episode. But the writing is very strong. The scripts are very good. The dialogue is very good. There were very few times where I felt like there was a missed opportunity with the words that were words on a page. On the flip side of that, the voice cast, the voice acting, the voice directing on this overall is not... It got better with some of the Beast Wars cast, not all of them. I think, you know, we have to address the elephant in the room of Beast Wars Megatron and his voice. Not being characteristically what we would expect, and his portrayal being a bit more like Beast Wars Scorponok, where he is a bit more of a suck up and he's a bit more of a...
I thought it was more like Inferno.
interesting. But you know, and it's but I like the comedy with that. They played some, you know, they played off the fact that there were 2 Megatrons, and they played off the fact that, you know, like Megatron was like, you need to change that name. Like those are little things I really really did appreciate out of this.
Later he was talking to Soundwave. He's like, Soundwave, tell the Predacon leader.
Yep. Like all of that was really good. And, you know, I think that was all really smart. You know, some of the voice cast, for the most part, was middle of the road. But the one thing I noticed with the Beast Wars characters is that they didn't have vocal effects and processing on their voices the same way the Autobots and Decepticons did from the first 2 seasons. So the Autobots and Decepticons have these, like, thick vocal overlays that I don't know if it takes away from the acting performances, but it's distracting. It's distracting to the show as a whole. And I think that's part of the bigger issue of that voice acting, that the voice acting isn't very good. The audio processing isn't very good. And then if the music is good, I don't know, because the mix of the whole show isn't terribly good. So the audio, which as someone who is a video editor, I always say audio drives the bus. Like that is always the first thing, you know, you have to have good audio before you can have a good video. And that's one of the things that takes away a lot from this show, that no matter how good the scripts are, the acting and the voice directing is still going to drag it down to a level that it shouldn't really be at. I liked how they kept to the Beast Wars source material. As I said in the non-spoiler review last episode that this it didn't try to reinvent Maximals and Predacons in the way, say, IDW did, where they really kind of just threw everything out and said, nope, we're doing it this way, and too bad. I like that they kind of said, okay, look, there's still the descendants of the Autobots and Decepticons. This still takes place. They're from the future, and they're trapped in the past. Now everyone's trapped in the past. You know, and they didn't really do, like, Dinobot's story is a little bit more about saving humanity from the Decepticons, from the Predacons, trying to destroy them, because that's Megatron's initial plan in the Beast Wars series. They skirted that by just kind of condensing down that Dinobot story and almost retelling Code of Hero in that third episode. I don't think it holds up as well as the original. I went back and rewatched Code of Hero after watching this the first time, and the original is still just a more engaging watch. But that might be because I've had more time, not, I don't mean 25 years with those characters, but just screen time of a season and a half of those Beast Wars characters versus three episodes of this series when they do it, of these particular Beast Wars characters. That said, there's a lot of cool Easter eggs. Particular ones for me involve Black Arachnia, who does have a pretty good voice actress. And those would be like when she hears a howling when they're being deceived by the Allspark in the woods. And that howling, you know, is clearly meant to be Silverbolt. And then in the fifth episode where she meets up, where she's rescued by Air Razor, she gives her a little kiss on the cheek. And that is, I mean, that is frame for frame how Silverbolt saves her in, I think it's Bad Spark, where she eventually starts becoming a Maximal. So I think that's all really good stuff. I didn't like the Beast Wars Megatron characterization. I feel like he was portrayed as Beast Wars Scorponok, and like you had Scorponok in there as a troop builder, which is even weirder. And I think you could have almost like killed off Beast Wars Megatron as like a statement, and then used Scorponok as himself to tell that portion of the story. I don't know, and that's me probably just throwing things against the wall, but. And the last thing is some of the visual directing I didn't like. Some of the fight choreography was flat. There's one scene that you see it in the trailer where the Maximals are attacked by the Decepticon Predacons, and they're sliding down a hill, and all of a sudden everyone has guns. You know, Optimus Primal has a gun. And you're like, where did he get that from? And it was only the second time I watched it through that I noticed in the background one of the communications officers, the cog recolors, splits apart into his weaponizer forms and kind of drops into everyone's hands. But it's like they could have focused in on that. They could have tightened up that shot, you know, made a little more apparent what was going on. If I've got to look for things, and I think this also goes to what Mike was saying about lighting and about how dark the show is, I think that's one of those things that they could have done better, especially since they're playing on Earth. They're playing outside. Like for two episodes, it was bright, and the other four, it was still fairly dark. And I think, you know, the story wraps up pretty well. I think the other issue I had with the story is that it almost feels like it negates the need for those first two seasons in a lot of ways. Like season one is now kind of a pointless affair based on that final episode. Alita 1 literally becomes the woman in the refrigerator. You know, and then season 2 now then serves as a way just to introduce the handful of MacGuffins they decide to carry over into season 3. And so it's almost like you could probably skip most of seasons 1 and 2, cherry pick a few episodes, and then watch season 3 and you'd be all set. And that's not a knock on Kingdom. I think that's more of a knock on the overall arc. But I do want to end on a positive. You know, I think some of the voice cast surprisingly was pretty good. Chris Calico as Dinobot was really good. The voice actress for Black Arachnia, who I don't have her name written down, was really good. Frank Todaro, who you know is Starscream, great as Starscream, also great as Rat Trap. And the other thing I really liked about this series is that it gave us all the fights and team ups you wanted from a showdown between these four factions that you expect. So like you had Rhinox hanging out with Wheeljack and Ratchet the whole show. That was cool to me. Air Razor fighting Laserbeak, Cheetor and Tigatron fighting Ravage and Soundwave. Like those are all really cool concepts that, you know, have probably not been explored as far as I can think of with Transformers, and seeing that on screen and seeing that move, you know, you have Megatron fighting Megatron at one point, and then you have, you know, people fighting, you know, yeah, everyone fighting Galvatron, like it's or Nemesis Prime. It's all pretty, it's all pretty cool in that regard. Like in terms of like that visual aesthetic, seeing things that you wouldn't normally see in other series, that was pretty cool.
Awesome. All right, Daryl, the biggest Beast Wars fan of Transmissions podcast. What did you think?
Yeah, well, I can't compete with Ant. Ant brought some serious research on that. Let's say, okay, the one thing that I probably would say, you know, overarching for the entire series of Kingdom that I probably didn't like, the Beast Wars characters. I'm kidding. It's, yeah, I can't do anything about that. I mean, in the spoiler-free review, I alluded to a character and Ant touched on, or really went into depth on it, was Beast Wars Megatron. And it stopped me in my tracks when I heard him the first time speak. We've done this video because we get advanced copies of the show and we watch them. I mean, this is coming out after the show has been aired, but this is going to cause quite the stir in the fandom. Dave, we talked about it off air with FJ as well, but it was David Kaye's Megatron is iconic, and we've discussed it, and you know, Mike mentioned it, how you know, it's they voiced, or they put a characterization on Beast Wars Megatron and voiced him appropriately, I feel. But people are not going to really see that. They're going to see Beast Wars Megatron doesn't sound like Beast Wars Megatron. He sounds like a pussy.
Beast Wars Megatron either.
He doesn't act like Beast Wars Megatron. What the hell's going on here? You know, this show sucks. You know, so this is the prediction, is that all you're going to see is Beast Wars Megatron, you know, this is not my Beast Wars Megatron. So kind of stuff. So, or bring back David Kaye or, you know, some shit like that. So try and, when you're watching the show, if you've listened to this and, you know, if you go back and watch it, try and watch the show and think of this as not the 96 Beast Wars, you know, show. This is a completely different Beast Wars show, and it doesn't have David Kaye. So, you know, it's a different characterization. He's not the big, strong leader that he is in the 96 Beast Wars show. And that's the big thing that really did stop me in my tracks. Another thing, I mean, I still like the humor. The humor did, you know, kind of continue on from Earthrise. I did like Earthrise more than I like this show, but I like more episodic stuff. I like things that are kind of one and done, you know, and I found Earthrise to be a fun series. So, but the humor did continue here. You know, I had one earlier. I had one of the jokes earlier. Something about, yeah. So when the Autobots are going with the Maximals to meet to retrieve Airazor, and they're having a hard time navigating the terrain. And I'm like, I found that very funny, because all of them are built for roads or flat terrain, and none of them can navigate this hilly terrain. So I found that was fairly funny. The other thing that I did kind of notice, and it's only because that I've been forced to read the Beast Wars comic, is that the arc in this for Airazor seemed to be the same one that Nyx is going through in the Beast Wars comic.
I think that's where I'm getting kind of the Dinobot stuff mixed up in my head, because
Right. Yeah. So I was watching this and I was like, wait a minute. Is everyone just writing the same arc and just, you know, swapping characters out? yeah, so it was, I mean, it was a decent show. I don't mind the way that it ended. And I did mention this in the spoiler free review as well, but killing what was her name, Alita One, off screen, that kind of sucked. Optimus should have got, you know, her Optimus should have got the opportunity to to see her off, I guess, not to just see her ghost.
Was she killed off screen? I thought there was that pretty big explosion in Earthrise.
Yeah, they pretty much died at the end of Earthrise. It wasn't off screen. They all fell into a, I mean,
she took
they fell into a crevasse.
They didn't show any bodies.
I don't know if it actually happened though, because in Kingdom you see her kind of like buried on the surface of the planets, and I suppose you could have say that it happens like there, but it's.
I assumed it was off screen because I don't remember seeing any body, but yeah. So I when everybody just kind of showed up as ghosts at the end of the series, I was like, oh, I guess they're all dead. All right. So, I mean, my memory is obviously much shorter than all of yours. So when they don't do a recap every at the beginning of every episode, I forget everything. I don't know. I liked it. I think that there's going to be a lot of kids who really enjoy it. They'll watch it as this is much cooler than the cartoons that they've, you know, kind of been watching. You know, it's got guns and shooting and characters die. It's awesome. You know? This is, as a 40-year-old man, 41, this is a show that is, you know, another Transformer show in a long line of Transformer shows. But for the kids out there that are watching this, this is going to be one of their first. And it's, I try to watch it with those eyes and, you know, it's tough, but I try to think, is if this was my first Transformers show or an early Transformers show, I think it'd be, I'd be pretty excited to watch it. You know, I think it'd be pretty cool to watch. So with that being said, I mean, the whole series, Siege, Earthrise, Kingdom, I liked it. I think they all worked well together. You know, there's pieces, you know, every single season has voice acting issues. You know, we've talked about them relentlessly, but there's not a lot that can be done about those. You know, and yes, the fandom is going to go nuts about, you know, the union, workers or union actors as opposed to the non-union actors. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I get it. And the budget just, it's non-existent for this show. You know, they paid for a lot. And again, we touched on it with SJ. And I mean, he really didn't want to talk about it during our interview with him. So we really didn't touch on it much, but there was no way that you were going to get an actor like Peter Cullen or Frank Welker and then get any other characters in this show. That's how tight the budget was. So, you know, if you wanted Optimus Prime to be voiced by Peter Cullen, that's great. As long as you wanted just Peter Cullen to stand there and talk to you, and that's it.
Yeah, but you get that's Frank Welker to do five voices under union rules. So you got like half the cast right there.
that's the G1 Decepticon cast right there. Yeah.
I would imagine Frank Welker costs more than Peter Cullen.
That's possible. But yeah, so I mean, these actors, these legends, and I'm going to agree with everyone who says they're the best at doing those voices. They are. They're awesome. They are expensive, you know? So when discussing this, and I don't remember if this part was in the interview with FJ DeSanto, but he mentioned that he cut the transformation one mode of the transformation was cut from Earthrise of a character, and that gave us a transformation for a Beast Wars character in Kingdom. Like, that one swap from series allowed another character to transform in another series. So, you know, the budget was, it's super tight, you know, and by obliterating that thing with a voice actor of a very high caliber, you get nothing else. You know, you need to increase the budget, and you increase the budget and you get a lot of different stuff. So, you know, maybe if this is popular, then the budget goes up for the, something next, and, you know, we get more, but this is what we got, and I'm satisfied with it.
No, I wonder with like the next few movies on the slate, if we will see an influx of funds into the animation side, you know, from the profits of that movie, like we saw with Transformers Prime, and benefit from some of the bigger budget stuff.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Historically, yeah. That's usually what happens. You know, I think, Daryl, to your point about the voice actors, one of the things that I think, I don't think it's necessarily the actors. I think people have kind of, you know, come to terms with that the quality of the actors isn't going to be as good, or that, you know, it's not Peter Cullen or Frank Welker. I think the issue isn't with, especially with Beast Wars Megatron, you know, is that his voice sounds a certain way. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like they went, okay, new voices across the board for all the Beast Wars characters, or new voices across the board for all the characters, because they did it in the previous season. So, like, Ironhide doesn't sound like Ironhide, and he's got a very specific sounding voice. But Optimus sounds like Optimus, and Megatron and Soundwave sound like Megatron and Soundwave. But then, like, characters like Ironhide or Shockwave don't necessarily sound the way you'd expect them to. And it's the kind of hit or miss attitude towards it. So, like, Rat Trap sounds like Rat Trap, and Black Arachnia sounds like Black Arachnia, but, you know, the Tigatron sounds nothing like Beast Wars Tigatron. And then a character like Megatron, whose voice is iconic, who is a central part of that story, you know, Optimus Primal, you know, Gary Chalk's Optimus Primal can kind of go either way. Like, it's just, it's his speaking voice. It's not really like a very specific, like, you know, character-driven voice. There's not specific ticks to it. Megatron has ticks to his voice. He has the no and the yes. Like, those are very specific. Thank you. to his voice. I think that's the thing that's going to aggravate people. It's not so much that they didn't get David Kaye. It's that for that particular voice, even if the characterization stayed the same, because it's necessary in the story, I think, you know, because now you have two Megatrons and you can't have them butting heads. You need to kind of move that story along. So the way they characterize him makes sense for this story. But having him not have, you know, those vocal tics, it'd be like having, you know, Sylvester the Cat without a lisp, or, but, you know, those just kind of things like you would expect to have.
Yeah, but you do get into the question, how, like, it's a fine line between adding those and then just being accused of just doing an imitation. So it's a no-win scenario.
Yeah, to some extent it is. I mean, especially you have to choose where you're gonna play that scenario.
Right. I mean, especially with all the criticisms the series has had on voice acting and stuff, I could just see that they wanted to stay far away from that electrical wire.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then so you gotta do it with everyone.
Right.
So say they do the tick, right? They do the voice, the vocal ticks, where the no's and the yeses and stuff like that. And they try to, and they have somebody do an impression of David Kaye, but they can't do David Kaye because that's why David Kaye is David Kaye, right? Everyone now can hear it and they can say, okay, well, that's a shitty impression of David Kaye. You know, why didn't they just change it altogether? I think, and, you know, looking at the show the way it turned out, I think they probably made the best decision for what they could have, and they essentially just changed the character type for the name, right? Beast Wars Megatron is now not 96 Beast Wars Megatron. He's this subservient, you know, character to, you know, who's, you know, hero worshipped G1 Megatron, right? And when he sees him, you know, this is who he wants to, you know, to serve. He wants to bring all of his followers to G1 Megatron because this is the guy who he wants to prolong his life and make sure that he doesn't, you know, get screwed over and become Galvatron, right? So this is not the Beast Wars Megatron that everyone knows from 96. This is a completely different character that happens to look the same.
To that point, though, like with characters like Rattrap, for instance, like Rattrap has that kind of vocal tick that Scott McNeil had done for the original character too. That kind of like New York accent and that kind of like street rat kind of way of talking. I wonder if they could have found like a voice actress who could, even if they didn't match it exactly, gotten a bit closer to it. I mean, to both your points with David Kaye, I mean, his portrayal of Megatron is iconic, and if you try to do an impersonation, it's just going to come off as a bad impersonation, totally. But I wonder if there is a way of having something that kind of still echoes it, but is not necessarily the same. Again, like what they did with Rattrap in Kingdom. Rattrap's portrayal, like his accent was pretty spot on. Like I totally believe the character was authentic to the 96 version.
Yeah, I mean, I think to Ant's point about being consistent, I think that's the issue, is that things aren't consistent. Some performances are trying to emulate the original characters, and some performances are going in a different direction, and it's not consistent across the board. So I can definitely see that as a potential criticism. For my part, I'll give my two cents here. I really enjoyed the show. I thought it was, like I said in the non-spoiler review, it was a nice conclusion to the series. I do agree with what you guys said about the first five episodes being more coherent and then the last episode being more of a coda, I guess. But I was still fine with that. I do think, just for me, I was really invested in Alita One and her group storyline from Earthrise, like Alita One, Jetfire, and all those characters. And I mean, having them die at the end of Earthrise and then and not get resurrected here and not get any any further continuation of their arc, it's disappointing. But on the other hand, I think it also gives weight to their deaths. So I can see wanting to just want to have more time with those characters, or having a different choice and having a show that uses them as the B plot as opposed to the Beast Wars characters. I mean, that could be another direction to go. But I think with the focus on the Beast Wars characters in Kingdom, there wasn't room to follow up on Alita One's storyline here. And I mean that, and just having her kind of her ghost say goodbye at the end, it was disappointing, but I understand why that decision was made. I did like having the explicit at the end, having it explicitly said, that she loved Optimus Prime. I mean that Optimus Prime, Alita One, it's throughout the series. It's definitely implied, but having it, put a period on it at the end, I thought was nice. And I thought just in general, I mean, it's never parody. Like with the female characters in the Transformers show, I think we have a total of like four or five really like defined female characters in the show. It's still like 75%, 25%, but I think it's still the female characters do get good representation, even even if it's not parody with the male characters in the show, and especially in Kingdom, we have Air Razor, Black Arachnia, and RC all getting significant parts of the show in Kingdom. And I mentioned this with the FJ DeSanto interview, having Black Arachnia, having an intentional choice to give Black Arachnia a little bit of an LGBT representation in the show as her both, you know, showing some attraction to both RC and Air Razor. I thought was a, you know, was a welcome choice. And you know, I'll say, let's go further down that path in future shows and give more representation and bring that to these shows. I think it's already been done significantly in the comics with the, you know, James Roberts and John Barber and Margaret Scott did a lot of work in bringing that into the comics. And I think pushing that into the animated realm is welcome. And I think it was, you know, a good choice in this show. So,
and FJ did say that wasn't intentional for,
yeah,
you know, anyone that didn't watch the interview.
So yeah,
it's great that it is there and it was on purpose. It wasn't just something for you to infer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also I want to highlight Starscream's performance or Starscream's character arc in this show too. It took Starscream in a direction that I was not expecting. I wasn't expecting Starscream to be at the end the voice of reason. Like that was surprising to have him, you know, he had a come to Jesus moment when he got the archives and the golden disc and saw Megatron's future and saw you know coming face to face with Unicron, kind of, you know, scared him straight, which you don't usually see that from Starscream. So that was a welcome growth of his character in the series. And he also like mentions that he was basically Megatron's whipping boy for millions of years, and that he wanted to break that cycle. I thought that was that making that an explicit motivation for his character was interesting. So, I just thought overall they did a good job of balancing all the different characters, providing just the hint of exposition that you needed to make the story make sense. Like, you know, a lot of times with stories where you have a lot of time travel elements and things are kind of going crazy and you have to sit and think, like, does this really make sense? How does everything fit together? And I thought, in the writing, they did a good job of dropping those narrative links in so that you don't have to, you know, scratch your head or puzzle about it. Everything does pretty much fit together and make sense and tell a complete story. And it's not a retelling of the G1 or the Beast Wars story, but it does homage both and provide something unique. And I think younger fans, kids who are seeing this for the first time, I think will be intrigued by this, and it'll make them want to go back and watch the old stuff and watch the old Beast Wars cartoon, the old Transformers the movie and G1 cartoon and everything. And
you could watch Beast Wars up until before they find the Ark, and then you got a divergent timeline. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... yeah, so I think there's definitely I think all the you know, the criticisms and issues everyone brought up are definitely valid, but I do think it overall is it does a good job and is a worthy addition to the Transformers canon, multiverse, mythos, whatever you want to call it. The big storytelling pot of Transformers. So, and you know, I'm a big lore Transformers lore guy. So I'm very happy to have something contribute to additional lore and new ideas.
And, you, yeah. You're a lore guy? No.
All right. Well, I guess is there any final thoughts before we wrap up? You know, anybody want to add any additional things, or have we talked this to death and tell everyone to go to put their thoughts in the comments?
I was excited that at the end when it kind of seemed like there was, you know, they were going to be something else. And I was like, okay, cool. What are we going to do? Unicron trilogy now? Okay, well, let's go. and then finding out that it's, no, it's not. It's just kind of, you know, we're done. And okay, well, whatever, I guess that's fine. But, you know, for a moment there, I was kind of excited to see what was going to happen next. And, you know, whatever, if something does come around in the future, that'd be kind of neat. But, when they seem like, okay, Galvatron and Nemesis, you know, we're off and we're going to get reformatted into something else. I was like, oh, what? What are they going to become now? What's going to be the next toy that I have to buy?
Yeah, Charles.
Rodimus Unicronus.
Do we want to do favorite moments?
Sure.
I don't remember.
Anth, were you going to say something?
No, well, it's just something for the lore portion. Something that was in the script that I'm like, I don't think that's ever been explored, and it's kind of a neat concept. I think it's Starscream says it when he finally like interfaces with, you know, he connects with Unicron. You know, he talks. I think it's when he's talking to Bumblebee. He says, it says something about the dead universe, and he goes, "I've seen the dead multiverse." And I was like, "Oh, that's a great concept. Mm-hmm. We have to find out more about, like, not just a dead universe, but multiple dead universes."
I really want them to go all in on the multiverse concept.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of the implication at the end, is that Unicron is. I mean, this is something that's already been, you know, the Transformers Hasbro people have said Unicron is a multiversal singularity, and I guess they brought that into the show where he's like, oh, it didn't work this time, so let's try again. You know, let's roll back the clock and do it all over again. So, yeah,
he'll show up in the Bot show. They better watch out.
Bot's Unicron. It's just a house.
All right, Mike, why don't you, if you have a favorite moment from the series, from Kingdom, let us have it.
Sure. It was definitely the Ark. I wish we got to see it like transform on screen, but, you know, budget and everything on that one. So I do get it. But yeah, the reveal of the Ark was still, I think, my favorite moment out of all of it. And it was still like, it was like the big climax. I was like, all right, yep. I'm on board for it. And then again, it punched the friggin' Decepticon ship. Come on, you can't be that kind of moment. Was the Decepticon ship the one that it punched? Was it the Nemesis or the Victory?
Nemesis.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you even had a moment in the when Optimus Primal confronts Optimus Prime. He's like, "You're our nemesis," and he's like, "The Decepticon ship." What?
So. But yeah, the big reveal of the Ark was definitely the big one for me. And one like a little smaller like side one was in that same episode. It was episode 5. You saw like as everyone was like jumping into battle, Primal jumped into battle and sliced the wing off of a Seeker, and the friggin' Seeker just died. Just done.
I thought he sliced it in half. It looked like he sliced it like clean in half.
I think he sliced the wing off of it because you saw it like fall to the ground and then purposely explode.
Hotlick died twice in this season and has died in every season of the series.
But yeah, that's my big one and my smaller one. So,
all right, okay, Ant, what's your favorite moment from the series?
I think, you know, for big moments, I think I really enjoyed Dinobot's arc. I didn't think I would, because I hold that original one really close to my heart. I think I will tell you probably, you know, if you, you know, first question to me is always, what's the best Transformers episode ever? I'll tell you Code of Hero, just about every time. And so, you know, to have to try to tackle that in this series, and, you know, I don't feel like they're going to top it, but they did a really good job with that story. So I think overall, I think Dinobot's story arc, and even beyond that, as the ghost of Dinobot, You know, part of me was kind of hoping that when he got the Matrix that he was, did he get the Matrix back? Yeah. That when he got it back, he was going to turn into that thing that's on one of the cards of the toys, the Unicronus Dinobot or whatever it is with the Lego bits coming out of his shoulders. part of me really wanted to see that. But I think that, and then I think for single moments, there were two that really stood out to me in that, Rhinox teaming up with Ratchet and Wheeljack, because I always felt like he was that version. He was both of those characters in terms of the Beast Wars story. And then because he's from the future, he knows so much more. And so, like, you know, they feel like he's a super genius. And I think watching that interaction was really, really, really cool for me. And then on another note, like towards the end, like these are the things that made me sit up and go, that was awesome, you know, Tigatron and Cheetor fighting Ravage. Like that was just one of those things. Like, oh, you know what? I didn't think that they were going to do that. And it was just like, oh, that was so cool. Like that was one of those, that was so cool moments where, I really got like pulled into the show. So I think those were my favorite.
Everyone's been talking up the Laserbeak Air Razor
and that's thing
from the trailer.
Good. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that's, you know, get you into it. But then, yeah, they do that. Mm-hmm.
And I think it made me notice the other, you know, things like that were happening the second time I watched it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jeremy, do you have a favorite moment?
I would have to say the arc being called Bellatran is there. I mean, literally, as I was watching, I was like, yes! and the Dinobot, like all the Dinobot stuff, even the little bits where he is like Air Razor is talking to him from the gel cell. I think every moment with Dinobot, I think, had meaning to his overall story, and it wasn't really wasted. So I really enjoyed that. And then, I think just some of the little humor bits, like Daryl pointed out, that where like RC was commenting on how, you know, they weren't made for the train. And then, like, you know, she looks up and I think she comments, like, she says something, you know, like some bots are or something. And she looks up and you see the, you know, the Maximals are already, you know, up the hill or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of smart writing through it. And I just really enjoyed throughout just the dialogue. Maybe not necessarily the execution, but the writing.
Daryl, favorite moment?
Oh, I liked when Dinobot died too.
You're serious, okay.
One last Beast Wars character.
Biggest Beast Wars, Transmissions Beast Wars fan, everybody. All right. You guys took all the great moments. I think I don't think I can give a different one, but
yeah, we did.
But yeah, I really enjoyed the Dinobot story arc. I also I mean, it's for me it's a little subtler and you know, it wasn't as prominent in this story, but Bumblebee getting a leadership role in this story, I thought was well done. I mean, you started off with Siege, where he's neutral. He's not, you know, he kind of hates both Autobots and Decepticons for ruining the planet. You know, he gets thrown in with the Autobots. He comes to respect Optimus Prime, and then through Earthrise, you know, he finally becomes an Autobot and becomes committed. And then here he's really a trusted member of the team. And Prime says, you know, if something happens to me, you have to lead the Autobots. So, and also the moment in the last episode where he sees Alita One's body first and tries to lead Prime away, you know, so he doesn't see her body. I just thought just that little bit of compassion from Bumblebee, where, you know, in the beginning of Siege, he's always got this tough, you know, persona where he doesn't seem to care about anything, and then in Kingdom he has this empathy and leadership with and relationship with Optimus Prime. I thought that was you know, the evolution of the kind of original little brother concept that Bumblebee had from way back in G1. I thought that was a nice way to end his character arc, even though he didn't get the spotlight in Kingdom. So, yeah. All right. Well, that's our spoiler-filled discussion of War for Cybertron Kingdom. Like I said at the beginning, you should have already watched it before you watched this, but
too late now.
Yeah. Go back and watch it again. I'm sure you guys had thoughts about Kingdom, so you can leave us comments in the YouTube video or send feedback to transmissionspodcast.com/feedback, and you can leave us voicemails, emails, all the good stuff, get in touch. We love getting feedback, and we'll probably mention it on a future show. So we've done a lot of Kingdom content. We've done the spoiler free review, which gave our general thoughts. That's already been up for a while. Our interview with FJ DeSanto and Matt Murray, that you should also have access to that. If not before this video goes up, right after this video goes up. So, you can check that out and check out the thoughts from the creators about, where their thoughts were on, why some of the decisions they made for the show. That was a really very thought-provoking and interesting discussion with them. So thanks to them for letting us do it. And if you want to hear more Transformers talk, you can check us out at transmissionspodcast.com. And, our podcast, we do two podcasts every week about Transformers, one about Transformers toys and merchandise, and one about Transformers comics and media. And that's all the good stuff. And again, special thanks to Ant from TFU.info. Thank you for joining us on these reviews and hanging out with us. And why don't you tell everyone where they can find Transformers University and all the other good stuff you do.
Sure. And of course, thank you for having me, as always. You can find my podcast, Transformers University, basically everywhere you find transmission. So Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, iTunes, YouTube, just about everywhere you find transmissions, you'll find me. And the website is www.tfu.info, the world's longest running transforming toy archive. And if you want to reach out to me, you could do that on Twitter, is where I hang out, and that is at TFU_info.
All right. And that will do it for this episode of Transmissions. Thanks again, everyone, for watching and listening, and we will see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, all.
Yes.
Later.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Transmissions. But just because this episode is over doesn't mean the Transformers fun has to stop. Join us and other Transformers fans on our Discord chat server by visiting transmissionspodcast.com/Discord. If you would like to learn more about how you could support the Transmissions Podcast, just visit transmissionspodcast.com/support. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again next week.